Today, the RBNZ hawkish rate hold spells higher rates ahead, but... Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one that is posts covering finance and property news. The New Zealand Reserve Bank Monetary Policy Committee voted to hold the official cash rate at 2.25%. Interestingly, the decision was a split vote between holding and hiking. Governor Bremen, who is chair of the Monetary Policy Committee, actually cast the deciding vote. It was a tiebreaker separating the views of external members and bank staff. The three external members all voted to hike, whereas the three internal members voted to hold. And I think this is the first time the specific votes were reported in the notes from the meeting, and indeed the first time that the vote was split along these lines. Now, reserve banks, of course, are technocrats, and they're trying to land their drone metaphorically on the 2 to 3% target with the crosswinds, with the lags, and everything else, and they fail most of the time. So it is very, very interesting to try and understand what is really going on. And in fact, the Reserve Bank of New Zealand gives us a bit of an insight into the dilemmas facing many central banks. Despite the split decision, there was a clear tightening bias evident towards the end of the record of the meeting. The committee remains focused on bringing medium-term inflation back to target and expects that official cash rate increases will be required this year. And in fact, all six members agreed with the central conditional projection, which signals an 80% chance the hiking cycle will begin in July at the next meeting. The committee does seem relatively clear that the direction of the official cash rate is up, but then they all noted that the pace of tightening will still be guided by the interplay between persistent price and wage-setting behaviour and broader economic weakness. It's trying to land that drone again. Many crosswinds and lags as well. The accompanying monetary policy statement, 68 pages in all actually, does remain one of the clearest publications from the mass of central bankers' reports. Other central bank technocrats, please note how the Reserve Bank of New Zealand does it. The statement highlighted the dilemma facing many central banks at the moment as to how to respond to the rising inflationary forces, higher market rates, and slowing economic momentum. It describes what I call the mechanical assumptions which cloud central bank thinking, and how, in a time of uncertainty, all bets are really on the table. Models and the real world often diverge at times like this. How best do you respond to the inflation bubble that is working its way through the economy? There are strong arguments of preemptive lifting the cash rate, for example, not waiting for any signs of broadening inflation. And there are also arguments for waiting and seeing, given how fragile the overall economy recovery has been and how uncertainty often spills over into weak demand, and how that may help to contain inflation spillovers in the medium term. Actually, they tabled three scenarios to illustrate the variations in outcome, with scenario one assuming that the conflict escalates, in the Middle East of course, leading to a more sustained disruption to global oil supply, oil prices increase and remain higher for longer, increasing inflation in the near term, and firms' price-setting behaviour becomes more sensitive to higher inflation, resulting in stronger second-round price effects. The second scenario assumes the same conflict conditions and oil prices as in the first, but in this scenario, firms reduce the extent of price increases, absorbing more of the higher costs into their margins. Higher inflation does not, therefore, become embedded in price and wage-setting behaviour over the medium term, and this moderates inflationary pressure, resulting in a lower official cash rate and stronger growth outcomes in New Zealand relative to the first scenario. And scenario three assumes global oil prices decline in line with their central projection, but the conflict has a larger negative impact on global and domestic demand, which prevents firms from passing on higher costs at all. Now, those scenarios have been chosen to illustrate the key uncertainties around the projection. The outlook for the Middle East conflict and associated global conditions are one source of uncertainty, and how the global shock influences pricing behavior and demand in the domestic economy is another. Actually, any combination of new shocks or altered transmission paths would result in a different outlook for inflationary pressure and monetary policy in New Zealand. So yes, uncertainty is the watchword. And once again, the focus was on medium-term inflation and inflation expectations. A big difference in New Zealand is the starting point for the cash rate, which is standing at 2.25%. And that is almost certainly well below the oft-sought and never-found neutral rate. Whereas in Australia, for example, the higher current rate in play is almost certainly somewhat restrictive. In the case of New Zealand, the risk is leaving the official cash rate too low for too long, and then having inflation taking off at the cost of having to lift the official cash rate more aggressively later on. The other risk is lifting the official cash rate too soon. But while the official cash rate remains in stimulatory territory, that risk can be mitigated by simply pausing to see how risks pan out. On the other hand, lifting the official cash rate soon could start closing the gap up to where there is less chance of making a policy mistake over the longer term. It's a balancing act for the Reserve Bank of New Zealand, as for many central banks. That is, if you subscribe to the oft-quoted, only have one tool, namely interest rates. In the summary of the deliberations, annual consumer price inflation across New Zealand was 3.1% in the March quarter, they said. The Middle East conflict is increasing near-term inflation and weakening economic activity. Inflation is expected to peak at 4.3% in the September quarter and to return to the 2% target midpoint by the middle of 2027. Of course, they always target that. All central banks do. That's what they're there for. Currently, core inflation, wages growth, and medium to long-term inflation expectations remain consistent, they say, with inflation returning to the 2% target midpoint over the medium term. Prices for petroleum products have increased substantially since the conflict began, increasing prices for fuel and other petrochemical intensive inputs such as plastics and fertilizers. And they said that the Middle East conflict poses downside risk to economic growth globally. High frequency indicators suggest that higher petrochemical prices are indeed weighing on sentiment and real incomes in many economies, and the impact is expected to be largest for economies with greater reliance on imported energy and energy-intensive manufacturing, including many of New Zealand's Asian trading partners. In some cases, these headwinds may be partially offset by continued strong demand for artificial intelligence exports and fiscal support. But the global economic backdrop remains uncertain, they say. They continue to discuss alternative scenarios based on future oil prices and interest rate paths, as I discussed. They highlighted that domestically, business contacts and surveys indicate weaker confidence and spending. For some firms, rising costs are squeezing profit margins and curbing investment and hiring intentions. Consumer confidence has fallen sharply, and the housing market remains weak. Economic conditions continue to differ across regions and sectors, though, with high commodity prices supporting incomes in regional New Zealand. The outlook for medium-term inflation pressures are also uncertain, they said. These could remain elevated if households and businesses expect higher costs in future and build those expectations into price and wage-setting decisions today. However, weak demand and elevated unemployment will dampen medium-term inflation pressures. And the committee noted New Zealand was in the early stages of an economic recovery. The GDP growth of 0.2% in the December quarter was lower than expected, but timely indicators, they say, suggest the economy continued to expand even in the March quarter of 2026. For example, strength in retail spending broadened across industries, and businesses reported increasing capacity constraints consistent with the economic recovery gaining momentum. There has been significant spare capacity in the New Zealand economy for some time. This is reflected in a range of indicators, with the output gap estimated to be minus 1.3% of potential output in the March 2026 quarter, which is broadly in line with their estimate in February. The labour market was stabilising, with employment growing modestly and annual wage inflation sticking at 2% in the March 2026 quarter. Net migration has increased materially since late 2025, and unemployment remains elevated, indicative of spare capacity in the labour market. Headline inflation remains at 3.1% in the March quarter, which was higher than expected in the February statement, largely due to the fuel price increases over March. But underlying inflation has continued to gradually ease, with measures of core inflation declining on average to 2.3%. First round direct and indirect effects from higher petrochemical prices will increase inflation this year. They said direct effects through higher fuel prices for businesses are expected to occur slightly faster than the indirect effects of higher prices of petrochemical intensive inputs. Intelligence from business engagement suggests that some firms have implemented temporary fuel surcharges, although the extent of this varies across sectors. Some businesses are absorbing cost increases into margins given weak demand, while others are embedding higher costs into price changes. And the committee noted elevated uncertainty around its near-term inflation forecast. The forecast incorporates current oil futures pricing by assuming Dubai oil prices fell to $96 by the end of the year. Annual headline inflation is therefore expected to increase to a peak of 4.3% by the September 2026 quarter and to return to that target midpoint by the middle of 2027. While shorter-term inflation expectations have increased, they say medium to longer-term expectations do remain close to 2%. With weaker consumption and investment, annual GDP growth in 2026 is now expected to be 0.9 percentage points lower than assumed in the February statement, and those forecasts indicate a slower economic recovery in the near term, with the pace of economic growth increasing by the end of the year. Market expectations for central bank policy rates have increased, both domestically and abroad, and the committee discussed how differences in economic starting points, fiscal and structural policy responses to higher fuel prices, and reliance on imported energy will influence the monetary policy responses required to contain medium-term inflation across countries. The committee noted that financial conditions in New Zealand have tightened through higher wholesale interest rates, passing through to higher fixed-term mortgage rates and, to a lesser extent, term deposit rates. The average interest rate on outstanding mortgages actually declined to 4.9% in March, but then is expected to increase to 5.3% over the next 12 months. And members also noted uncertainty around the scale and duration of the global economic consequences of the Middle East conflict, and how the shock will propagate through the New Zealand economy and influence medium-term inflation pressures. The committee discussed the risks of higher near-term inflation feeding through to medium-term inflation, and members noted that firms' price-setting behaviour could be more persistent because of generally elevated inflation since the pandemic and the cost-push nature of the current shock. This would lead to stronger second-round inflation effects than currently assumed. This risk is accentuated, they say, by low profit margins for some businesses given weak activity and higher costs, limiting degrees to which they can absorb further cost increases. And wages pressures could also arise from labour shortages in some sectors and regions. However, if the recent increase in net migration continues, this would help to offset the risk and potentially start stoking house prices and rents as well. Watch this space. Members noted that spare capacity in the domestic economy and weaker global demand could constrain firms' ability to pass on higher costs by more than assumed in their central projection. Lower spend by households in response to real low income growth, persistent elevated unemployment, a weak housing market, and reduced resilience due to repeated shocks collectively pose downside risks to domestic economic activity. But economic activity could recover faster than assumed if a resolution to the Middle East conflict leads to lower domestic fuel prices. And the committee emphasised that it remains focused on ensuring core inflation, wages growth and medium and long-term inflation expectations remain consistent with inflation at, yes, 2% over the medium term. It also discussed the monetary conditions required to achieve the medium-term inflation mandate, and members noted that financial conditions have tightened materially across the year, helping to guard against the risk of second-round price effects. So all committee members agreed that the central projection for the official cash rate was appropriate and a good reflection of the trade-offs currently facing. However, members differed on their preferred timing for the initial increase in the official cash rate. With inflation pressures increasing in coming months, those members agreed that the official cash rate increases would be required to ensure inflation returns to target over the medium term. Those members noted the wide range of estimates for the neutral interest rate, making it difficult to assess the extent to which current monetary conditions are accommodative. The wonderful question of the neutral rate, by their works, will you know it or not? And they discussed that the timing of official cash rate increases should depend on the evolving data of the outlook and the balance of risks, and close attention needs to be paid to global development, supply chain normalization, core inflation, wage dynamics, and inflation expectations. All of this data, as well as high-frequency indicators, will clarify whether strong second-round inflation effects are emerging. So all committee members agreed that increasing the official cash rate at upcoming meetings would likely be necessary to ensure higher near-term inflation does not feed through to higher medium-term inflation. And the committee judged that this is a proportionate response to bring inflation to target in a reasonable time frame without creating unnecessary volatility in output. And the pace of official cash rate increases will depend on the relative influence of persistent wage and price setting behavior versus weak economic activity on medium-term inflation pressures. And elsewhere, Thursday's budget did little to change the story, as despite this being the election year, the nation's annual budget contained few of the usual sweeteners which will be designed to win over undecided voters, as Finance Minister Nicola Willis stuck to a very prudent path, producing what she called a responsible budget that prioritised returning the government's books to surplus in 2028-29 financial year. But smaller government is on the agenda, with around 8,700 public servant jobs, or 14% of the total, to be cut by 2029, with the government planning to merge some departments and increase the use of AI. Over the next 4 years, it says, those initiatives will deliver savings of around 2.4 billion New Zealand dollars. And a new prudential levy will be introduced on banks and non-bank deposit takers, insurers, and other financial market participants to cover the costs of the regulatory services the Reserve Bank provides. It's estimated that will raise about 209 million New Zealand dollars over the next 4 years. Of course, the four main banks operating in New Zealand are all Australian owned and have faced criticism for the higher net interest margin that they draw from New Zealand. The government settled on the prudential fee after discussing other options to tax the banks. The Reserve Bank of New Zealand will collect the fee with revenue returns to the government through an increased dividend, and it will apply to banks, non-bank deposit takers, insurers, and other market participants. Oh, and the fee, by the way, is consistent with practice in Australia, Canada, and the UK, and mirrors the approach taken by New Zealand regulators, including the Financial Market Authority, that fund their activities through levies on market participants. Elsewhere, university students will lose the fees-free tertiary education program, which covered the cost of students' third year of tertiary study. The program was introduced by Jacinda Ardern about a decade ago. So, all up ahead, Kiwis will see higher interest rates and weaker economic momentum, and likely continued weakness in the housing market, as I discussed recently. But more broadly, the dilemma facing central bankers as to how to navigate the inflation rapids is, well, there on the table for all to see. This is certainly not a temporary thing. They can't just look through it. But it's rather a set of structural issues which have to be navigated. And the risk of more policy mistakes ahead are indeed significant. So, central bankers, well, we'll see how they play this out. I'm afraid that on past experience, it won't be an easy ride. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.